Welcome to the very first episode, the world premiere of About a Book, the podcast where I tell you the real story behind the world's most iconic books. Thank you so much for tuning in to my new podcast. My name is Jade, I'm 22, I am a recent English and history graduate. I'm a big nerd, I love history, I love books, and I love podcasts. And quite frankly, I'm dead bored at home, so I was like, why not take the plunge and start my own podcast? I've managed to get a rare slot of peace and quiet in my house, so hopefully this goes off without a hitch. Kind of, I guess, for a little background of what my idea is, I'm planning on kind of talking about an author, their life, and kind of what inspired their biggest masterpiece, and why that masterpiece is still so well known and cool today. I realise that just made me sound like a big, huge nerd. Maybe I am, I don't know. But for my very first episode, I knew I wanted to do something spooky because it's spooky season and I love scary books. And I also wanted to do something Irish. So what better than Bram Stoker's 1897 gothic novel, Dracula? Everyone knows him. He's iconic. My earliest memories of Dracula was in the St. Patrick's Day parade. This guy used to dress up as Dracula every year and walk in the parade, and I used to be absolutely terrified of him. And I remember my family telling me all these stories about how I'd be like roaring, crying whenever I saw him. And quite honestly, it still gives me the chills. So, you know, that's probably why he's still so popular today. So yeah, we've all heard of the book, but did you know that it's actually the biggest selling Irish novel of all time? It's also the most adapted novel of all time. Probably not familiar with the guy though, because he lived a very low-key life, and I actually didn't even know anything about him either. I had to do some digging. So here's kind of what I found. A little mini bio on the guy. So Bram Stoker was a Taurus. I love astrology, that's probably going to feature in this podcast. Anyway, side tangent, he was a Taurus. He was born on the 8th of November, 1847, in Clontarf in Dublin. And if you're a history nerd like me, the year 1847 might ring a bell, because it was actually the worst year of the Irish potato famine. So yeah, not a good time to be born. His life didn't get off to a great start. But he came from a very like normal, happy family. His dad Abraham and his mom Charlotte. And he was the third oldest of seven kids. So I'm sure he had to do a lot of babysitting as well. And then if being born during the famine wasn't bad enough, he was also really sick with this kind of mysterious nerve disease. It was really bad. He was bedridden. He could hardly even sit up until the age of seven. But to keep his company, his mom was real nice. And she, as you would with any seven-year-old, she told him spooky stories and scary Irish folk tales. But more on this later. But he did say that this time kind of helped to grow his imagination. So it got to pay it off in the long run. I'm glad he can see the positive side to it. As I said, he made a full recovery by the age of seven. There isn't really much on his childhood after that, but I did find out that he went to Trinity for 6 years and he studied maths. Not much about that. I don't think he was too interested. He was more interested in getting really involved in college life. He was part of every sports team, really making up for that last time where he couldn't even walk. He was part of every team. Star athlete, was really popular in the place, loads of friends. He's kind of known as this like big ginger, like friendly giant. And he was also the auditor of the Historical Society, and he was the president of the Philosophical Society. And it was through the Philosophical Society that he met Oscar Wilde. So he was a very cultured guy, had lots of cultured friends. And then after 2 years, he kind of did part-time, and then he had to kind of earn money for his family. So he was part-time student and he worked full-time as a civil servant in Dublin Castle. And he also was like a volunteer theatre critic, and he would write little reviews for the Dublin Evening Mail. So he was like a really busy guy, always very interested in the arts. And then during those years, he also did some writing, but you know, didn't quit his day job. He wasn't very confident. But you know, he had a few publications. And in 1878, he married this girl from his area called Florence Balcombe. And when I tried to look her up, I couldn't find too much. I mainly just saw that she was celebrated beauty. Imagine being described like that in your Wikipedia page. Everywhere I looked, it kind of just said she had these beautiful deep eyes and this beautiful chestnut hair. She was also an aspiring actress, but she isn't known for that, so mustn't have worked out too well. But she definitely must have been a beauty, because when she started getting close to Bram Stoker, she was actually already engaged to Oscar Wilde. So drama. Someone clearly had a type for writers, and that must have been really awkward, because as I said, they were really good friends. She apparently couldn't hack the long distance because Oscar was in Oxford, and then she also liked Bram Stoker because he had a better set of teeth. She said that Oscar Wilde had curly teeth, which, oh, that's not a nice image. But it all turned out well in the end. They became friends again and they stayed in contact for the rest of their lives. So soon after they got married, Florence and Bram went off to London, where he became an acting manager of the Lyceum Theatre, which was owned by this really famous Shakespearean actor guy called Henry Irving. And Henry was described as tall, flamboyant, mesmerising, with smouldering eyes and elegant long hands. And Bram worked for him in his theatre for 27 years. They had like a very intense relationship. Some people said it kind of bordered on obsession. In fact, Bram actually kind of worked as his personal assistant like for free. It was very hands-on. Some people kind of say Bram was in love with Henry Irving. I don't really buy it, but you know, that's for you to decide. And even when Bram's only child was born in 1879, he was actually christened Irving Stoker, but he became known as Noel. But yeah. The obsession was real. Many people have actually noticed that the physical description of Dracula in the novel is like really close to Henry Irving, and like I saw the extracts where they're both described and it was quite freaky. I think it was definitely inspired by him. But you know, their friendship was really great. It was really valuable to Bram Stoker because it allowed him to kind of mix with all the rich, fancy people in London. And he got to travel the world and he got to meet his idols like Walt Whitman. And he also got to meet Mark Twain, and he got to meet presidents of the United States, McKinley and Roosevelt. But what's funny is that he never actually traveled to Eastern Europe, which was the setting for his biggest novel. During this time, you know, he was doing a little bit of writing. He was experimenting with different genres. And his first published novel was actually a romance titled The Snake's Pass. And he also published a collection of fairy stories called Under the Sunset, which is supposed to be really good. And then in 1897, he published his grand masterpiece, Dracula. He was around like 50 at this time, so if you haven't got it started on your masterpiece yet, do not worry, you have a lot of time. It was a success. It was kind of forgotten about, you know, it didn't reach proper peak status until he died. And then, no, I couldn't really find much on his life after he published Dracula. He's kind of pretty much only known for Dracula and his life kind of in relation to Dracula. Kind of the next update I could find was that Henry Irving died in 1905, and then suffered a stroke soon after. Was it a stroke? Was it heartbreak? Who knows? And then during his recovery from the stroke, he wrote kind of a book about their time together, their life together, called Personal Reminiscence of Henry Irving. And he actually published 12 novels in his lifetime, including a little short novella called Dracula's Guest. And then Bram died at the age of 64 on the 20th of April in 1912, which was a week after the Titanic sank, which was an interesting fact I found. And he died from, it's kind of mysterious what he died from, but many people think it was syphilis, so that's the answer I'm going to go with. And when he died, it's kind of sad. He was known as Henry Irving's friend and a theatre director more than actually a writer. And today he's obviously known for one of his books, even though he wrote 12 more novels, which have all gotten really good reviews too. And unfortunately as well, he kind of died really broke, but a bit more on that later. So that is Bram Stoker in a nutshell. Let's get talking about the actual book. So there's many theories, as I said, as to the inspiration behind Dracula. Some people think it was Romanian fairy tales. Some people think it was Vlad the Third. But I think it's kind of unlikely that this dude from Dublin was like an expert on Romanian fairy tales, or, you know, super obsessed of Vlad the Third. I think it's more likely he was inspired by his Irish upbringing. And this would make sense because, as I said, his mother used to tell him really, you know, kind of spooky folk tales and ghost stories. And she told him about her actual experience living in Sligo during the cholera outbreak. She said people would be walking around like zombies, like grey faces all withered up, and people would be buried alive. People would be pushed into graves with big sticks, and it was awful, awful, awful stuff that I'm sure definitely scarred him. He also took visits to the crypts in Dublin, you know, as you do when you're a little kid, and he was really into the Irish Gothic novel titled Carmilla, which was about a lesbian vampire, and that had come out a few years before, so that obviously had no doubt in it inspiring him. And then also, sorry, jumping back to when he was a kid, one of his treatments was getting his blood drained. How creepy is that? So that was a common treatment back then, but you can imagine, you know, little Bram, this guy comes to his house once or twice a week to drain his blood and then goes off again, you know? Sounds familiar. Stoker also began writing Dracula in around 1890, which was 2 years after Jack the Ripper was in town. So, you know, he lived kind of in a crazy time during the famine. Like, he died around Titanic crashing. He started writing when Jack the Ripper was floating around, and people found in his, you know, he owned like lots of kind of newspaper cutouts of Jack the Ripper, and he had like loads of little notes on it. So without a doubt, this mysterious killer sneaking around in the night must have definitely inspired the mysterious character of Dracula. As I said, he had this really intense relationship with Henry Irving. Apparently Henry was like really difficult to work with. He could be kind of draining the life out of people, you could say. So, and I said the physical description matches up pretty well, so that's also another possibility. I also found out there wasn't much on this, but apparently he was really interested in the occult as well. Apparently being in the kind of London high society, many of them were involved in secret societies and the occult and spooky things. Obviously I couldn't find much on it because it's a secret society. He started writing the novel actually in Cruden Bay in Scotland, and this is kind of his go-to place. He used to run away from his family there, run away from his job, and he used to just like relax and write. And Scotland is actually the setting of two of his novels, so it clearly made a really big impact on him. And there's a castle nearby where he used to stay called Slane's Castle, and the kind of physical description is what apparently inspired Dracula, so that's kind of cool. And then, you know, Dracula, as I said, it was a time, you know, with Jack the Ripper going around, there's loads of fears in society, so people will be really interested in horror novels and kind of true crime and all this. And Dracula is actually known as what's called invasion fiction, which is kind of this fear in society that Britain's colonization would have really negative impacts for Britain. Like, people would come back and take revenge, you know, diseases would spread, you know, all these terrible things, which makes sense because Dracula is about Dracula when he goes to Britain and he starts, you know, causing chaos. So that makes a lot of sense. Another example of invasion fiction is War of the Worlds, which came out the same year. And like, the whole thing about horror being popular in times of uncertainty is so true. Even now, during, you know, everything that's happened in 2020, there's true crime documentaries trending on Netflix and there's horror movies coming out, and everyone keeps just like looking up more and more like negative news, you know, feeding it. It's maybe one of the reasons why Dracula is still popular today, you know, like, such as fear of the unknown, fear of kind of people that are different. I think Dracula is still so recognizable today because of the story's ability to be revamped. Okay, that was a really bad joke. I thought of it when I was writing the script. I was like, should I still put it in? And I did, and I kind of went for it there. I didn't fully commit, so it flopped. We're just going to pretend it didn't happen. But anyway, about it being revamped and adapted. The first adaptation was when Bram Stoker wrote the stage play. Around the same time as the novel, it was really rushed. It was kind of just so he could secure the theatrical rights to the book. And then he even asked Henry Irving to star in it, and Henry was like, oh dude, that's really bad, embarrassing, I'm not putting my name near it. And Henry Irving was probably right, because when it did, it only had one performance and it only had two paying audience members. So yeah, quite a flop. But I think Dracula can owe its long-time success probably to the movie adaptions. Most notably, you all probably are familiar with it, is Nosferatu in 1922. You're probably more familiar with this movie though because of the big copywriting issue it had. So basically, the movie was made without any consent from the Bram Stoker family, and they made like a pretty penny off it. So, you know, as I said, Bram Stoker died, he didn't have any money, his family were suffering, so his wife Florence was like, hey, I'm not gonna deal with this. So she went to the court, she fought it, she got her money, she got her coin, got her bank. She also got all of the copies destroyed. But, you know, not all of the copies, because obviously the movie's still around today. I believe you can watch it on YouTube. I probably shouldn't be endorsing that. It's known today as a really important cinematic masterpiece. So thank God it wasn't wrecked. And there's also been a million movies since then. The character Dracula has over 272 screen credits. He is the second most portrayed character, followed by Sherlock Holmes. It's kind of hard to keep track of because, you know, they don't take into account everything. So if that question's ever asked on a pub quiz, if you put Sherlock Holmes or Dracula there, you've got 50-50 chance of being right. But it's not only films, there has also been over 150 novels, and that is one of the cool things about Dracula. If you read it and you don't like it, there's about a million different alternate endings, alternate storylines, everything. So my favourite one, probably, I haven't read this yet, but it is definitely on my list. It is about where Dracula wins. He goes to Britain, he wins, he marries Queen Victoria, they have loads of vampire babies, and vampires become the ruling class across Europe. It sounds pretty awesome. But it's not just movies. Oh no, no, there's over 200 books still in print about Dracula. That's kind of like one of the cool things. If you read the book and it's not your thing, there's so many books out there with alternate endings, different storylines. One of my favorite, actually, I haven't read it, but it's on my list. I've heard very good things. It's where Dracula wins. He goes to Britain, he marries Queen Victoria, they have lots of vampire babies, and they become the ruling class across Europe. Which sounds pretty awesome to me. There was also, most notably, a book released in 2009 called Dracula the Undead, which was released by Dacre Stoker, which was Bram Stoker's great-grandnephew. I'm sure you can tell by the name. And what I think is cool about this book is that he actually got like notes left behind by Bram Stoker and letters and like other things they found to kind of put together a story that I guess Bram kind of would have approved of. It's very true to the original, apparently. So yeah, if you like Dracula, check that one out. And then, you know, Dracula kind of brought vampires into the spotlight, and they're still so prominent in pop culture today. You know, you see Vampire Diaries and The Twilights. I might, you know, do an episode on them in the future because I'm a big fan. But yeah, I think that's pretty much it. I think that's Dracula in a nutshell. So a bit of a shorter episode today, just a little bite-sized taster of what I'm hoping to do. If you like this, let me know. And yeah, I'm hoping to kind of maybe do these maybe once every 2 weeks. So yeah, thank you so much for listening if you actually made it to the end. And yeah, I definitely recommend Dracula. It's a great book. So if you decide to read it, happy reading. Bye.